Okay, now we go.
My name is Laura Weinstein. I am 96 years old, and I'm my Christy's grandmother.
That's right, and my name is Christy Attlee. I'm 30 years old. Today is May 19th, and I'm speaking with my grandmother, Laura. And we're recording this interview in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, where she resides. All right, so we will start. So my grandmother, Laura, grew up in Haiti. So I'm curious to know, what was it like growing up in Haiti?
Growing up in Haiti as a lot of child. As a little girl, I live in my town called Jacmel in the southeast or southwest part of the island. My house was across the street from my aunt's house. My aunt's house was across the street from her mother-in-law and from her father-in-law. In a way, the street belonged to us, to this family. We were always together. I can go from one place to another where I was spoiled and when I was reprimanded when needed. Mm-hmm. So it was a good life. We were all loved, and life was as pleasant as it could be for our children.
And now you left Haiti when you were 26 years old and came to the United States. So why did you leave Haiti?
Many reasons. Now, I just talked to you about my early childhood.
Mm-hmm.
That was completely different from my years as a teenager. That's when my problems started. Because we went from Jacmel to Port-au-Prince. And Jacmel, we were the big fish in the war. And mm-hmm. in Port-au-Prince, I was a little fish in the big lake, if you, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I was happy in a way because I was leaving Jacmel, where I was beginning to feel life was pretty dull, in spite of the fact that we went to the beach. Often I hated to go to the beach because it was always in the company of my mother and father. My uncle and my aunts, who was all my friends, stayed in the city and went to the park to have some fun.
Oh.
So I never really enjoyed going to the beach. I hated it. To the point that one day I got sick. And they decided that it was puberty, but I think it was really an interior revolt against that kind of discipline. And I started having migraine headaches. And the first one was going to the beach. And it was an inner revolt that has already started and that continued really throughout my life in Haiti. When we moved to Port-au-Prince, I was, of course, happy. It was a center that has much more to offer than Jacmel. I made friends rather easily in school, but of course, getting into my teens, I started having a lot of problems with my mother, who wanted to control my life. And when I mean control, my mother would so hide to listen to my phone calls. Whether, I don't know what came to mind, but I caught her a couple of times doing that, and I was so angry. And one day, during one of our discussions, she told me, "You have no respect for me." And I said, "But you have no respect for me either." I said, "If you gave me respect, I would give you respect in return," which I think is really fair. Mm-hmm. Anyway, during my 13, I have to say that at the time we had, it was like a Victorian era in Haiti, where the emphasis for any girl was keeping pure, that mm-hmm. is, a virgin.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
That virginity was a key word if you are going to get married or whatever. But many men tried, and though they did not succeed, they could go and ruin a girl's reputation without, and it happened in many times. I was very strict with myself. I knew what to do, and I knew to what extent I could have fun. And But of course, my mother was always after me and checking everything that I was doing. And I was in a revolt. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. A constant fight mm-hmm. between myself and my parents. So my early years as a teenager were miserable. And I mean miserable, because I had got to the point where I couldn't stand my mother. And she may even have felt the same way towards me, wondering how could I have given birth to a girl who is so mean. Because for her, I was mean. For myself, I was defending my right as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, we are living in a society, narrow-minded society,
mm-hmm.
where the class system was about worse than the race conflicts that we have in the United States. That is, you belong to a group. For example, there are some girls I like in school, and I like to walk with them on my way home. My mother didn't want me to walk with them. They were not of my social class.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't care less whether they were high or up, but they were the people I liked because we were all getting together to give a hard time to the teachers. So I was angry about all those things because I felt that at my own age that I had the right to choose my friends, and friends were really people with whom you felt certain connections,
mm-hmm.
a need in a way to be together. But I didn't have that right, but I fought. I didn't submit myself. I was in a constant fight with my parents, constant.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school, I was a good student. Again, I was kicked out of school.
Well,
I was kicked out of school. That was in my last year. I was going to have to go down to the Department of Education to have my, what you call, the back.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I was kicked out of school is very simple. When I went to a new school for my last 2 years, and the director of that school used to be a professor at the school where I attended before, and he himself had some problems with the owner, which is the director. Am I clear here?
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to, and when my father went to see him, he told my father, Mr. Bordet is my maiden name.
Mm-hmm.
I have decided that we cannot ask all the students to pay the same amount because some are privileged, some are not.
Ow.
My father agreed to that. He said, okay, if I can put a note that we were rich, by no means, but he had a job.
Mm-hmm.
Supreme Court judge.
Mm.
And where was I?
You were saying why you got kicked out of school by this professor.
Yes. So it just happened that the girl was an excellent teacher, an excellent student. And I liked her because she helped me with my math. My math was deplorable. I hated mathematics. I hated chemistry and I hated physics. I put them all together as things that cluttered my mind and really prevented me from doing much better in other areas. Anyway, one day we were told that the girl has been expelled because she couldn't pay her tuition. I told my daughter, the other students, we cannot accept something like that. Because he had made the promise that those who could would pay more so that the poor one could go to school.
Mm.
And I said, this is not fair, this is not right. We are going to go on strike. Who wants to go on strike? Everybody was there and said, we'll go on strike. We are not going to school tomorrow. Now I have to go home. What am I going to tell my parents? So we decided to go to some parents who are more tolerant, waiting for the end of classes to go home, to walk home normally, as though nothing had happened. But what I didn't know was that the director of the school got enraged. And he wrote a letter telling my father that he was sorry, but I was being expelled for my irreverent behavior. Wow. When I was told that I was kicked out, I didn't know what to do. I was afraid to go home. I said, my God, my parents are going to be enraged. Mm-hmm. But I had to go. Oh, my mother was very angry. My father was angrier. And I told my father, that woman, the director of the school, exploited you because you are very naive when it comes to people. Mm. You see, I said, she is a mean woman. And the only way she treats me well is because I am your daughter. And you are a Supreme Court judge. Mm-hmm. I said, that's her own interest that she sees in me, not the person that I am. Anyway, the director came, that I was talking about the school that I left to go to that new school, that was a Mr. Hall. Mm-hmm. Mr. Hall came to see my parents, to see, wanted to come to see my father. So when he came, I was there. So they asked me, of course, to leave so that he could talk to my father and telling him about my behavior and so on and so forth. And so after that, they called me and I told my father, in the presence of the director of the school, he is only here really protecting his own interests. Mm. I was expelled from school, my father was able to get me a tutor for math because I was good in all the other subjects. Math was my only weakness. And he came, Mr. Board. Of course, I just a few months away from getting her back. And I want to have some consideration for you, some respect for you. And I will let Laura, I will... not cancel how could you call that, registration. Mm-hmm. To which I answered, you will not do it because you know that Laura is not going to flunk, that Laura is going to succeed. And since your school is rather new, the more students you have who pass, the better your chances of having a school that will continue to evolve. Of course, my father asked me to leave the room when I started defending myself. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I passed my back with flying colors. Mm-hmm. I was fourth among 400 students. And everything was, I was known as a clever kid. Very, particularly in French. I was an excellent student. So much so that sometimes the teacher would forget a quotation and he would just go to me, hey, finish it for me. I was excellent in French. But my social life, boyfriends, my life was being spied on day by day by my father and my mother. I have with me my brother Harry and my cousin Roger. If I went out with a fellow and they saw me, they would deny, no, we never saw her. You know, because they knew.
Yeah.
They were really helping me. And so anyway, I had, that was my school endeavor. We also had a club formed by the people from Jacques-Bel. That is my native town. All the people who knew each other, who belonged to the same social group, we founded a club where we went dancing and also where we had lectures.
Oh, wow.
And very nice programs. And that was the opportunity for us to have a good time with our boyfriends. But they also watched the way you dance. If you are dance too close to the guy, mm-hmm. they would come and tell you, you know, this cannot be done. To which I would answer, I do what I want to do. I did. My brother, my brother Eddie, came and told me, he was among the judges' behavior, really judging people's behavior. So I told him, stop drinking, rather than come and tell me to stop dancing the way I want to dance. My father once, I had a boyfriend he didn't like. I danced with him once. The second time, he walked in and took me by the arm and got me back to my seat. I was never so humiliated in my life. Wow. So you can imagine how angry I was. I was full of anger and I was ready to kill. I said, I have to get out of this country. It's killing me. My father had a cousin who herself had a son in the United States, newly married, about a year or so, and he had a child and needed somebody to take care of the child while his wife went to work. So I happened to witness the conversation that I told my mother and I told my father's cousin, why don't you suggest that I could come? I will come and help them with the child if they allow me to go to school, because I want to continue my studies. And that was the way I got my visa. At the time, you had to have an affidavit to get admitted. So I got my affidavit and I left. At the time, I was going with a fellow who was German, and it was an on and off relationship between the two of us. But I didn't really realize how much I loved that guy till the break time came. How could I explain that? Anyway, we had a misunderstanding. That was really the end of our relationship. Though my mother liked him, and my father didn't like him, because my father said that he will go probably and look for a light-skinned woman to marry rather than you. But I went with Carl, that was his name, on and off. And we had an argument and ended the relationship. And my mother liked him. So he came to visit when my father went to sleep at 8 o'clock. My father went to sleep at 8 o'clock every night. At 8:15, Carl was at my house. So my mother gave us a certain amount of freedom because she liked him. He was a very nice-looking German fellow. Mm-hmm. So that on-and-off relationship has finally ended. And through the grapevine, he learned that I was leaving Haiti. I was happy. When the time came for me to leave, I realized what a big change it was going to be for me, because I was still protected by my family. I have lots of friends. One of my friends wrote we had a menu for a dinner that I had in my order, and I had to write, everybody wrote something for me. And he wrote, no matter how much, how much I love you, Laura, you are one of my best friends and the nicest person I've ever known. Go and don't come back to this country. I never forget. Ne reviens plus dans ce pays. He was probably among my friends, my defender. Whenever somebody said something wrong about me, he said, nobody says a word against Laura when I'm around. Because for me, she's the best I've ever. It was pure friendship. Anyway, I left Haiti. Never went to my cousin, because I maybe should have given the details, the why and why not? But I went to visit his brother prior to go in Nashville, Tennessee, prior to going to Pittsburgh, where my daughter, brother, his other younger brother, mm-hmm. was the one who gave me the paper. And he said, Laura, I don't like that arrangement. When you left, when Jacques, that was the name of his brother, left Haiti, you were a young girl, mm-hmm. a kid. Yeah, now you are an attractive young woman. And you know, it's a young couple. I don't like that arrangement. You never know what feelings a guy can have for another woman. Mm-hmm. That was very wise. He said he knew you as a child. He didn't know you as a young woman. He said, I'm going to write to him, and I don't think that you should go there. And as far as your parents are concerned, there is nothing that they can do. You are here. You are going to make your life the way you want. And that's the way I left my brother, my cousin's house in Nashville, where I had a job. Oh, my God, I have to talk to you about that job. I was working in a dry cleaning plant. I wanted to have some money of my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to put the clothes in a bag and use a clip to attach the label to the, you know how it is done.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the day, I had, what do you call that?
Calluses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All over my hand. And it was awful, so painful. I got to my cousins. I sat on the front porch and I started crying. I just couldn't take it. So
wow.
He came and carried me inside and said, you know, you are testing life in the United States. But yeah. Strangely enough, I got so used to my job. I did it so well that the manager came and told me, I think you should try to go to the university. He said, you are the best employee I ever had. You do as much work as the other woman, when it took you one day to get the work done, you did it in half a day. He was so pleased. And you know what he told me, a white guy at the time, you have to remember we were in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
when prejudice was at its top. And he said, I have a suggestion to make. You go to Vanderbilt. That's the university you should choose. Vanderbilt was a white only. White only, mm-hmm. no blacks. Of course, I told him, yes, I sent him back. In the meantime, summer was coming, I got a job as a counselor. Yeah, in a camp.
Oh, wow.
And I did well. They liked me. And I learned a lot about, American songs. I didn't know any. You know, sometimes you really, in a different country, you really feel that you are not part of it.
Hmm.
I didn't know any of the songs. And everybody was singing and I was listening. By the time camp ended, I knew all the songs. I got made myself open to everything. So I was a good counselor. I was complimented. And then decided to stay in Chicago. That was the place,
that's where the camp was?
No, that was the organization. It was a settlement house, and the camp was a play camp organized mostly for children who are not, poor children.
Okay.
So I decided to stay there, and as a student I could stay if I did some volunteer work. I agreed to that. There were other students also there, and so I stayed there and I found myself a job, which I hated. I was typing labels at Penny's, of all places. And the more I typed, the more they wanted me to tap. We had to tap over 1,000 labels a day. And there was a guy who was next to you checking how fast you were doing. I couldn't take something like that. I was enraged. And I didn't like the people because I didn't have anything in common with them. You know? Mm-hmm. So what am I doing in that place? One of the residents at the settlement house told me, "You look so unhappy, Laura. What's the matter with you?" I said, 6:30 in the morning, I have to be in the bus going to work. I hate the work. And he said, "Why don't you try to get a job at Roselle College? That's where I go." And they had, yesterday they put a sign saying that they needed secretaries. So why don't you go? I know the young woman who is in charge, and I'm going to tell her that I'm going to send you to see her. I went. I was so nervous, I don't know, that I tapped one word without making a mistake. That was awful. But maybe they liked me or whatever, they saw the potential. I got the job at Roosevelt College. A month after, I went to the circulation desk to return a book, and there was a fellow there, Bill Goins, I never forgot his name, and Cy was standing next to him. And Bill said, "Laura, I'd like to introduce our new co-worker, Cy Weinstein." So he introduced me to Cy, and also told me, and then it was a Friday. He said, "What are you doing Friday, Billy, Laura? I said, "I have to plan. What, would you like to take me out?" He said, "Frenchie, you are too much for me." He called me Frenchie, Bill. So he said, "I'd like you to meet by our new co-worker, Cy Weinstein." I was working and going to school. They gave you 2 free classes at Roosevelt. Mm. That was an advantage. And Cy had just applied for a job a month before. And that the same privilege. So that's the way we met.
Wow.
That's the way we met.
You know, I was going to ask, you started talking about Vanderbilt University and how it was a whites-only university. And I was wondering if it was, it's hard enough to be an immigrant, but it must have been harder to be an immigrant of color from another country who has an accent. And I was just wondering if it was hard for you.
You know, I don't know whether it was the way I was brought up, but I see the advantage that I had was that I knew who I was. You see, I was the daughter of a Supreme Court judge. I was a member of a society in Haiti. And I didn't think much about the color scene, didn't bother me much. Because I didn't know to what extent. When I was in Nashville, I experienced it because I went there to take the bus, and there was a French woman who lived upstairs, shared the same way. And she called me. She said, "Laura," she was on the bus. I went on the bus, sat next to her up front. Up front. The driver didn't say a word, nobody said a word. The fact that I spoke with an accent made me stand out. Mm-hmm. Would you believe that?
And
that opened a lot of doors for me, and I exploited it to the limit. And I said to myself, "You think you are so smart, I hear someone who is smarter than you are." That was my thinking. And at Roosevelt, I wanted to go have lunch. It was either white or it didn't matter to me. Afterwards, I was going with a German fellow in Haiti. So how much prejudice could I have? None whatsoever. And then one day, one of the fellows, black fellows, told me, "You know, Laura, you have to make up your mind. Either you go with us or you go with them." I said, "The young man, I came here because it's a free country. They call Whitey." I said, "Whitey didn't tell me not to go with you. I will go with whoever side makes it easier for me and happier." So that's why I started most of the time. Most of my friends were white than black. I didn't make the choice. They made the choice for me. I had an American doctor, a black guy, light-skinned black guy, who loved me, and he would have married me. His family didn't like me because I was a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
So we were, as a West Indian, we were not part of the white group. We were not part of the black group. When the white person hear you talk, say, oh, you heard you speak, right away, we are a friend. They met me on the bus. Oh, have you gone to the Art Institute of Chicago? It's beautiful. You should go there. You should go here. You should. I never got that kind of welcome from the black families. That was really. But I became very. When I moved from Nashville to Chicago for that job, and we decided to remain in Chicago, I was introduced to Mr. Lane, who was the president or vice president of the Urban League.
Hmm.
He invited me to come to his house. That was a black couple, of course, no children. They adopted me as if I was their own. I mean, they really spoiled me. And when I got engaged to Cy, they embraced Cy also. So that was the family that really, Mrs. Lane tried to fix me up with a couple of black fellows. They didn't like me.
Hmm.
They didn't want me.
Hmm. Well, fast forwarding a little bit. So, of course, you married Cy. You and Cy moved a couple times. And then you now have two kids, my stepfather, Eric, and my step-uncle, Lloyd. So I'm curious to know, how did it feel to become a mother?
That was a dream of mine. I wanted to be a mother, and that's the reason for which I wanted to be married. Though I liked the idea of being a free person, but I realized that I was not free to the point that I could decide to have a child out of wedlock. I couldn't do something like
that. Too free.
So I got married. And my relationship with Cy was sweet and sour.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a relationship that continued to our married life. We had some very exciting times together, but we had some pretty bad times together also. Now, his family, particularly his sister, didn't want to hear a word about me. His father was very unhappy because not only wasn't I a Jewish girl, but I was not rich either. So had I been rich, there would have been an objection to Cy marrying me, okay? Anyway, to Cy, I have to say that Cy was just unbelievable. When his parents told him, we don't like her, I don't have anything against her, but the mother said, but you are taking my son away from me. Anyway, Cy told them, I had gone with a lot of girls, many Jewish girls. Of all the girls that I've found, she is the one. Either you accept her or you lose your soul. He was that blunt. He said, you don't accept her, I don't come to your house anymore.
Wow.
And the mother, they were very nice to me after that. So I went into the army, he went to Germany. And while he was there, his father came every week to see me. Sometimes he brought me a cake or something like that. And I visited them. They realized that it was a matter of fact and that there was nothing that they could do. And I still remember the first time I took Eric to see them. Eric was so cute. There is no other word. That he was really a pretty, he was actually a pretty girl. And she took him, she was going to buy something in the neighborhood. And then she came back and she said, you know, for all the babies, he was the most beautiful one. And I told them, he is my grandson. And she, unfortunately, she didn't live long enough. That was a shame. She died a few maybe not even a year after we were married. And his sister, Shirley, was adamant. No way. She has been pushed by her friends. She told me that later on. Because I saw a letter that she wrote to Cyril Ruhr in Germany, in which she said, "You have to find a way to end that marriage." Like that. Wow. As well, dispose of me as though.
Wow.
When I saw that letter, I didn't say anything to Cy. I said, you don't know whom you are dealing with. Try me. And so anyway, Cy and I got married. At the beginning, we went to Haiti rather often. And I always insisted that Cy should call his sister, who was living in Miami at the time. And he said, "I don't want to have anything to do with her." I said, "Yes, you do. She is your sister. And you have to give her a chance. People go. Maybe she'll learn something." So I always insisted that we should at least call her. I called her. Her husband was very nice. He was wonderful towards me. And they always invited us. Once I went without Cy, they came to my cousin's house to pick me up and take me for dinner. The relationship started improving to the point that now Shirley and I are very good friends. She calls me every week almost. We talk on the phone. And she told me once, "You know, Laura, we go." I didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
When she came to visit, and I was asking me, "Who is that, my grandfather, my father, what were they doing?" And I told her what they were doing, and she was speechless. Cy's father was a laundryman. And when my father asked me, "What does his father do?" I said, "I'm not marrying his father." And he was delighted also. When Cy went back to school to get his degree in library science, he didn't like his being a salesman. That was very ordinary. His daughter married into a salesman. So he was very, very proud of Cy and very nice towards him. I had no problem on that side, except my mother wasn't like the fact that I had married a Jewish fellow, that I didn't have my children christened. I said, "That's the way it goes. That's what I want, and that's the way my life is going to be." Mm-hmm. And here I am. So here I went to school. I attended Roosevelt for a few, couple of years, but I didn't get my degree in, I wanted to be a teacher, but I realized I'm not really, that I could do something else. A friend of mine told me about the special program that they had at Georgetown University, that I could get a certificate or a degree in translation.
Hmm.
And that's what I did.
And that's how you guys came to D.C.?
Pardon me?
Is that why you moved to D.C.?
I was in D.C. already because Cy had been transferred as a district manager to Washington. So that friend of mine was also a Haitian in the same situation. She had gone to Georgetown University, gotten her degree in translation, and had a good job. And I got a good job.
Mm-hmm.
That was a modern language, Institute of Modern Languages. I got a very good job there. And unfortunately, that coincided with Cy finishing his studies at the University of Maryland. He had to find another job. He had to find a job as a librarian, and the only job available that was really acceptable was a job in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to leave my job and become a SBA boarder.
We're gonna pause there for So these recordings only last for 45 minutes, and we're only 5 minutes away. So I want to make sure we don't get cut off.